case this morning is case number 70220, In Re NJ, a minor child. Mr. Jordan and Mr. Sanford. Mr. Jordan.
May it please the court, counsel. I'd also like to reserve my last 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Sure.
Members of the Supreme Court, this is a classic case in which a weak case was taken to a hearing and the verdict was infected by uncharged bad acts that supplemented the evidence on an otherwise weak case. This court has many times over the years, whether it's Rhimes or it's Tavar, has talked about the danger of putting bad act evidence in. And in this case, if you had any doubt that it affected the verdict, I would encourage you to look at page 106 of the appendix, in which Judge Stockard says the following. I do find it clear, beyond a reasonable doubt, you spit on it. No question about it. They didn't charge you with that. I don't know why. It clearly affected his decision. And if you take a look,
let me ask you this. What about statute NRS 62D420 that all relevant evidence is to be admitted? And why wouldn't that be relevant?
I will tell you this, and I've been waiting on this, and I expect that this court wants to look at that statute very closely. But I'll tell you why, that I don't think it was admissible even with 62D420. Is because if you read that statute so literally that anything that's relevant, competent, and material, as the statute says, it opens the door for constitutional violations. And this court has already said a statute cannot tread on a constitutional right, it cannot create a constitutional violation. And I'll give you the example. Let's say that an officer gets a tip that a 16-year-old has drugs in his home. The officer, without a warrant, without any further justification, goes into the home, searches the child's bedroom, and picks up an ounce of methamphetamine. It's then charged as trafficking in a controlled substance by the prosecutor and is brought to trial as a juvenile, of course, because the perpetrator was 16. Under that theory, and the theory that Churchill County is attempting to get you to adopt today, it's still admissible because it's competent, material, and relevant.
Well, you might also be violative of another evidentiary rule.
I agree with that, Your Honor, and that's why in this case I believe it was violative of 48.045.
Why is 48.045, though, applicable in this proceeding as to a juvenile?
Your Honor, I've argued that it wasn't, and I argue that it still isn't. And I've argued that there has to be, based on Kell versus State, saying that the juvenile court is a product only of statute, that there is no accompanying bad act statute in the juvenile code. Now, if this court were to say that, well, Mr. Jordan, the evidentiary code is the evidentiary code, there's still been no finding that it was relevant, no finding of clear and convincing evidence of this bad act, and no finding that it wasn't overly prejudicial. None of that occurred. It literally was thrown into this case in the middle of trial.
Mr. Jordan, since this all occurred the same day, wouldn't it conceivably be part of the res gestae or explaining the whole incident, what happened later that day, as opposed to bad acts? Couldn't the court look at it that way as well?
There's an argument to be made for that, Your Honor, but again, we disagree because this would have been uncharged misconduct, and clearly, even the ruling of the court shows it was a different battle.
Res gestae might be an exception to the uncharged bad acts, you know, like that. So I'm just saying, if you tell me why you don't think it would be, I mean,
I do not think it would be in this case, Your Honor, for the simple fact that this battery was far enough in time away. Because here's the interesting thing about how this actually went down, and part of the credibility determination that I think was incorrect here by Judge Stockard was the original statements by the alleged victim to the police said that she was struck after the camera was turned off. If you'll remember the facts in this case, we have a videotape that both sides agree do not show any active. Do not show any striking of any type, whether it be with a foot, an open hand, something like that, by my client to this alleged victim. It was all a young juvenile by the name of Tierra McQueen, who did a number on her, I might add. But the issue being this, Then in trial, this victim switched her story to that it happened before the camera. She literally went from it happened after it was turned off to it happened before the camera was turned on. And the reason that is the state is now stuck with that. And if the crime stopped before the video was turned on, how is it intertwined so much that it had to be brought up to explain the crime? Because the crime was already over. And if the crime's already over, it's not res gestae. If it's not completely intertwined with the crime, it's not res gestae. And that was the facts that were presented. And they're now with that, with what their alleged victim said. Furthermore, these are two separate instances that could have been charged separately. They weren't. These are two things that the prosecutor decided one charge, one theory. It was a theory unsupported by the actual evidence. If you go through the transcript once again, the first witness, Mr. Wills, said Ms. Johnson did not strike her, didn't see it. The second witness, other than the alleged victim, Ms. Wiseman, said she didn't see it, didn't happen. Ms. McQueen said, although she gave you, she was focused on herself, said she didn't remember seeing it or seeing it. Mr. Gutierrez said he didn't see it. Now, interestingly, there was also evidence of impeachment of the victim herself. She testified under oath this had nothing to do with boyfriend issues between her and the other two girls. Every other witness testified that was the entire motivation. Her credibility was in question. She was the only witness that came up with this alleged punch.
Mr. Jordan, though the district court obviously found her testimony credible to support that punch. Are you suggesting that we substitute our credibility determination or our judgment for that of the district court or the testimony?
No, Your Honor, because that's not the standard. You can't substitute your judgment for that. What I'm arguing is that determination is not supported by substantial evidence and was an abuse of discretion. And the reason that is because the victim in this case was thoroughly impeached on several topics as you look in the transcript.
And but he, the judge, is his job is to determine credibility.
And I understand that, Your Honor, but we would say that the case in this matter, clearly the weight of the evidence showed that punch didn't occur, and that finding her credible was in error. She actually testified under oath differently than she had before. She testified under oath to telling Tierra McQueen that my client, Ms. Johnson, did nothing wrong that night.
Was she impeached on that?
She was impeached on that.
So the judge heard that as well.
And you go throughout numerous instances in this case, the facts just didn't make sense. And she, as I said before, she switched her story back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. But I believe that the reason that the credibility determination came into play was the bad acts. This other spitting. If you even look at page 106 of the appendix, he spends more time speaking about the spitting than he did about the actual striking.
Back on page 92, wasn't there a discussion about the spitting and that not being charged as an alternate crime?
That's correct. It's also on page 94. There's also, I object pretty much to
the time. Saying that he understood that that was not the crime being charged?
I agree. But he also kept saying, I'll allow it. If you look at...
He said he would allow it as res gestae.
That I disagree with you on, Justice.
Try page 92. It's there.
But at page 95, he just kept saying, or page 45, he kept saying, I'll allow it. I'll allow it.
I realize that.
And I think the res gestae determination is incorrect as well. But, Your Honors, I would tell you that the standard that the state is asking you for with regard to the Chapter 62 statute leads you down a very slippery slope and a very dangerous road.
Counsel, would you look at the legislative history as the 62D?
I did, Your Honor.
And the court going into the difference in juvenile cases versus criminal cases, understanding there's certain constitutional rights, yet looking at this as a juvenile matter and not a criminal matter, per se?
I have, Your Honor, but it also doesn't strip them of their rights, and it also makes it so that you can't go willy-nilly with inadmissible evidence.
Well, parse out for us how you're stripped of your rights when the court, the legislature outlined in 62D 420 how the court is to look at that or their ability to look at things.
As we argued in the opening brief and the reply, Your Honor, we believe that it has to have a built-in product of admissibility. If it doesn't, it allows for free-for-all. Because what they argued in their brief was, it's a juvenile case, it's a special proceeding, it says anything material, relevant, competent. And you can see in my example, saying if that's the standard and that's the literal standard, there's going to be violations of the Fourth Amendment product. There could have been a confession without Miranda product because it's still...
The Constitution would keep those out. You're talking about evidentiary rules, and by the terms of Chapter 48, that does not apply to 62D. I think that is Justice Douglas's point. Your argument for the exclusion of this evidence, assuming you get past res justi, is that it violated 48035, right?
Yes.
And so you want the evidence code to apply in toto under 62D, right?
What I'm arguing is that there is no provision to allow bad acts in the juvenile case in the first instance based on Kell versus State. If you disagree with that analysis, there's got to be some procedural safeguard for this juvenile that's the same as an adult.
And if you reference the res justi, why doesn't that take care of the issue?
Because I still disagree with that ruling that it was res justi, Your Honor. This was a bad act.
Well, then, under Bellin versus State, that's just exactly what it was. A bad act is part of the res justi.
But, Your Honor, this came in. It wasn't charged. There was no notice. I can tell you that had this gone in front of an adult court, would we have even gotten a clear and convincing evidence ruling when we have a thoroughly impeached witness with four others saying it didn't occur?
But the court specifically found a number of those other witnesses not credible and found the victim credible on these points. So I'm not, as a trier of fact, it's the court's determination to make.
Understood, Your Honor. But as we've said, I believe that the determinations in this case were made because this bad act evidence came in. You had a weak case, and you had numerous witnesses saying the striking did not occur, but it was overblown by the fact that he was angry about the spitting. It was overblown by the fact that spitting dominated the case from beginning to end, and it violated her due process. They could have charged her with it. They didn't. They were stuck with what they pled. It was their job to prove it, not to mention the fact, if we're talking bad acts, remember, this court has made it clear it's the prosecutor's responsibility.
But counsel, if you're talking bad acts, the court was talking 62D 420 under the juvenile court. That's where we're having a problem. You're trying to put us over here, the court put us over here, and so we're trying to understand the argument why under 62D this is not relevant where the court can allow it in.
I'll answer your question, then I'll reserve the rest of my time. Your Honor, our argument from the beginning has been that these were not admissible in the first instance. There's been no calculation in this case under the Tavares case, Qualls, Petrocelli, any of those cases, any of its progeny, that they were admissible in the first instance. Okay. There's just been an overruling of an objection.
That's pursuant to 48045, those rulings.
Right.
And your argument, buy it, not buy it, is as to relevancy as to this particular matter.
Well, I would say in this particular matter, it wasn't relevant because it wasn't charged. And this is clearly showing a case where the bad act evidence is used as a character evidence to act in conformity therewith and not for another purpose as outlined in 48005. And therefore, the bad act evidence couldn't come in as relevant, competent material.
How finite must we define the act? To only the striking or alleged striking? Are we able to look at the surrounding?
I think you can look at the surrounding to a point, but as this court has already ruled, it's got to be intertwinable. And with the facts that came out in this particular case, the act was over before the video machine was even turned on, and this happened, if it happened at all, at the end of the video. Some several minutes later, not connected to the original act, if it occurred at all. And that's why it's not intertwinable, and that's why I believe it wasn't res gestae from the start. And, Your Honors, it's a very dangerous thing to allow them to handle other bad act evidence in with this crime when it's a weaker case. The evidence was far from overwhelming. And I believe it affected this judge's decision. I believe it affected the outcome. I'm going to reserve whatever time I have left.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, members of the Supreme Court, and may it please the Court. My name is Joseph Sanford, and I represent the appellant, the State of Nevada, in this matter. I'd like to first address the appellee's contention that all misconduct evidence is inadmissible in juvenile proceedings. To my understanding, the argument is that because 62D 420 does not have an explicit limitation that the United States and Nevada constitutions apply limiting factors, that there is some unwritten implied limitation that would require other evidentiary code pieces to be sort of adopted by the legislature before misconduct evidence could be considered. And I believe that that leads to some absurd results and violates the plain meaning of the statute. The absurd result being that because 62D 420 is the uniform evidentiary standard for juvenile proceedings, there are no other evidentiary codes to even consider. And so misconduct evidence, hearsay evidence, perhaps even photographic and video evidence without a specific exception wouldn't apply. And so there would essentially be no evidentiary code at all if we don't consider 62D 420.
What type of notice did you give Mr. Jordan as far as the bad acts?
So the bad acts that were given, one, the spitting was included on the video, which was provided in discovery to Mr. Jordan. It was heard on the video, and so he was aware of it. As far as the other bad act, and it wasn't mentioned, but the acts at the park, I'm not certain whether it was part of discovery or not. My recollection is that that was something that actually just came up in testimony.
And it's your contention that these were shown by clear and convincing evidence, not preponderance, but clear and convincing?
Your Honor, I believe they are shown by not only clear and convincing evidence, but Judge Stockard actually made a finding that it was proven beyond a reasonable doubt. And so if that ends up being a standard that you choose to adopt, I believe that was proven, as found by Judge Stockard, more than beyond a clear and convincing standard.
Do you think that the acts could be admitted as res gestae, pursuant to Judge Stockard's ruling, and if so, why?
I do believe they are res gestae as well. The acts were on the same day. They were between the victim and the defendant, regarding the same concerns and motivations that precipitated this later battery at the park, with the spitting also being essentially contemporaneous, and also being around the same time that the victim claimed that the threat was made to her, the harassment charge that was also part of this case. And so I believe that these facts were all part of the same occurrence, same events, and that there was no way for the state to properly introduce all of the evidence of the battery charged as well as the harassment without introducing the video and the spitting that was on that video. Going back to just the statutory basis, I don't believe the state has any contention that the Nevada Constitution or the United States Constitution does not apply in juvenile proceedings. They apply to the same extent as the legislature when it adopted 62, I think it was 193, originally considered that although this is also a criminal, a delinquency proceeding, is not exactly the same as the criminal proceedings for adults, and characterizing because there is only a judge and not a jury involved, that the unfair prejudice that might occur from the introduction of evidence that would be considered in the general evidence code would be minimized. And so if we look at 62D 420 and actually compare it with a lot of the factors that are concerned with, say, Tinch in the bad act evidence standard, a lot of them are actually overlapping. Specifically, the first prong is relevance in Tinch and is also covered in relevance in 62D 420. The second prong is clear and convincing evidence proof, which, although not exactly correlated, has a competency and material element correlation. And then the weighing of the prejudice versus the probative value, or the unfair prejudice versus the probative value. 62D 420 requires the court to only consider the probative value of the evidence and to disregard the prejudicial aspects. And that is something that judges are trained from, to separate in their mind what is prejudicial and would be concerns for this court and all courts for being propensity evidence or bad character evidence, and separating that from the relevant piece that this evidence provided. It helped to show motive, showed what the intent of the victim was. It showed contemporaneously the positions of the parties, what they were doing at the time, and what their feelings were at the time.
So your argument is that the subsequent spitting incident would lend support for the witness's testimony that there was a striking?
Yes, Your Honor.
How so?
That with...
It was probative for that purpose.
That it was probative for that purpose. That her position, essentially contemporaneously, I believe the video was approximately 30 seconds after the pulling out of the car, which is around the same time, showed that the defendant was in proximity and was in the... it was one of the two actors there, not just a person who was videotaping or one of the other members who was standing far side, but was involved with the defendant in the car and in the acts that constitute the battery.
So your argument is that it is probative to demonstrate the reaction by the juvenile to the previous attack?
So I'm sorry, I was confused on which juvenile you meant, but I think it is probative to show that the defendant, juvenile.
So you weren't offering it for the purpose of demonstrating the harassment charge. You were offering it for the purpose of supporting the court's determination of battery?
I believe it is important for both.
Reading the court's pronouncement of its determination, it doesn't appear that the court connected the spitting incident to the harassment charge. Do you disagree with that?
I don't disagree that the judge did not make an explicit finding of that connection. I do believe he made an explicit finding that it was part of the registered state of both of the charged acts.
But who was the victim in the harassment?
The same victim, Ms. Norman, was the victim in both crimes. And so the spitting was contemporaneously with the harassment. I believe that it shows that she was there, she did approach, and that she did have the opportunity to make that statement.
If the judge had not allowed the challenge to the victim to fight earlier or the spitting incident, was there still sufficient evidence to adjudicate this minor as a juvenile delinquent?
There was, Your Honor. The testimony of the victim was deemed credible by Judge Stockard, and she made an explicit declaration that the defendant did strike her in the face and that she could feel the rings on her hand and that she clearly remembered that. And the testimony of the victim is sufficient grounds, when found credible, to to sustain conviction.
You agree, don't you, that the act of spitting was not part of the facts charged to support harassment?
I actually argued in the district court, and I do maintain, that the charged conduct was a battery on that night, September 22nd, 2015, by the defendant on the victim, and that that was forced violence used upon her, and that the spitting as an act of battery was encompassed within that transaction. That's, although the TWIT language did express a punch, because that was what was initially contained in the police report, that notice of the battery was sufficient. It did provide, along with the discovery of the video, to show what did occur on that night. Judge Stocker disagreed with that and ultimately held that they were separate acts that could have been charged separately, and we're not going to dispute that based off the ultimate adjudication.
Mike, perhaps my question was inartful. I thought that the facts supporting the separate harassment count were not based on the spitting incident.
The facts surrounding the harassment account were was the allegation that a statement was made threatening the juvenile, the victim, with cutting if she were to approach her boyfriend at the time, and that was contemporaneous with the spitting. But I don't believe the spitting was a necessary element.
Okay.
Of that.
So that occurred contemporaneously.
It did occur contemporaneously in the victim's testimony.
Yeah, okay.
And so, Your Honors, I would say that if you're searching to adopt a standard, I believe that the 62D 420 standard provided by the legislature addresses the due process concerns of misconduct evidence, especially when considered by the fact that only a judge would preside over a juvenile proceeding, that they are prepared to separate the wheat from the chaff and to make a decision about what is probative and prejudicial testimony, and that they will rely on the probative aspects of that as required by 62-420 and disregard those prejudicial aspects that are propensity-based evidence.
Well, the question that occurred to me in preparing for this case today, because it is en banc, so perhaps, you know, we'll have a new rule or whatever we're considering here, but like in Petrocelli versus State, they created the Petrocelli hearing for 48045 for the reasons that it be heard before the trial takes place, and not so that the defense attorney is not kind of ambushed or surprised with this. Now, Mr. Jordan's saying, I think he's saying he's kind of surprised with some of this evidence that was submitted. Wouldn't have been fair if these were bad acts and not race just, if they qualified as bad acts, that perhaps we have Petrocelli hearings even in juvenile court. What do you think about that?
I don't believe a Petrocelli hearing in juvenile court is necessary or even terribly wise, considering the legislature has already determined that speed is a certain element of necessity, not that we want to prejudice rights, but that because there is no jury to hear the prejudicial elements, that the judge who will be making the same decision is going to be hearing it. So the only real advantage to the hearing is to provide additional notice to the defense that there could be some bad act type evidence provided. And in this particular case, that evidence was clear in the video that was part of discovery, but In all cases, if there is particularly irrelevant evidence, which is generally what you might not be considering knowing beforehand, that would be out under 62D420 already as irrelevant.
So about this hypothetical, a juvenile who's not certified on a very serious crime is now facing a delinquency hearing. And as part of that hearing, and let's say that the act is bodily injury, but is not certified. And now the trial goes forward, and the state wants to introduce evidence of a prior similar bodily injury, uncharged act committed by this juvenile. Should it be admissible? Completely unrelated, not part of the same transaction, but behavior by this juvenile that previously occurred, maybe even 6 months or a year before. Now, in an adult trial, there'd be a Petrocelli and Tavares and the whole gamut of testing on that. What's the guardrails in a juvenile proceeding with respect to the use of that evidence?
I'll answer your question before I sit down. The answer in your particular hypothetical, it sounds to me that the evidence would neither be relevant or material to the crime charge. And so it sounds like a clear propensity argument, which has already been under Tavares and its progeny, considered irrelevant because that its purpose is largely or almost solely.
So your response acknowledges that we would use the evidentiary rule and the guardrails that are constructed in Tavares to exclude it, but we wouldn't use them to consider whether they should be included. That seems inconsistent.
I believe the standard would be the 62D 420 standard, that relevant, material, and competent, but that relevance could be guided by the decisions of the adult court in determining whether prior bad act conduct is irrelevant. Because if it would be irrelevant in an adult case, it should still be irrelevant in a juvenile case. However, if the basis is, for example, the clear and convincing standard or the outweighing of prejudicial and probative value piece from those decisions, that doesn't have an exact corollary in the 62D 420 standard, and so those pieces wouldn't necessarily mesh.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Jordan, I'll give you 2 minutes.
And you could answer the first question that I'd have before they start the clock is, if this had not been admitted into evidence, the spitting and the harassment, is there sufficient evidence to adjudicate this minor as a juvenile delinquent?
No, that's what we've been arguing from the beginning. There was not credible evidence produced that she struck anybody. The weight of the evidence was that no striking occurred, and that's what she was charged with. The victim was impeached thoroughly, and her credibility was in question, and we believe that there was not sufficient evidence. I do want to move on to one of the other questions you asked Mr. Sanford, which was, did I have notice? Now, this was a long time ago, and I don't know that he remembers the conversation. The first time it was brought up to me was the day of the adjudicatory hearing, because he was going through the video, and he was slowing it down. And I will tell you, if you run the video at full speed, you can't see the spitting. I'm still not even totally sure it's there, because you can't see some projectile coming out of the mouth. She literally stands over the alleged victim and looks at her like this, and then you can't tell if it's a flash of light. There's cars out there with headlights and things like that. But that was the first that it was made aware of. It was the day of. So as far as notice, it wasn't there.
Also, was he correct, though? You were provided with the video beforehand?
I had the video beforehand, Your Honor, but for him to argue looking at that video would have given you the impression that she spit on that person. Without slowing it down and slowing it down and slowing it down. I mean, he literally had it slowed down at like a quarter speed of normal. I mean, he would have had to have been looking for it. And the reason he figured it out was the alleged victim apparently told him that, and that's when they started looking for it. So to say I was put on notice that it was there and available is just not accurate. With regard to your hypothetical, Justice Hardesty, with regard to if the more serious crime was charged 6 months ago, I would argue it isn't, and my argument has been from the beginning, unless there's some constitutional safeguard for a juvenile, it shouldn't be admitted. And the issue in this case is, we never got that chance. My client and I had to sit through there and watch this stuff come in without even so much as a pretrial hearing to even know if it was admissible. And that affected whether we were going to plead, it affected what we wanted to do at trial. Part of my reasoning was that she was only charged with the striking. not the spitting.
Thank you, Mr. Jordan, Mr. Sanford. Thank you for your arguments and briefs in this matter. This matter will stand submitted. You want to recess to 1:30?